Iran strongly condemns the terrorist attack in the Turkish city of Istanbul, reaffirming its unwavering support for the government and people of Turkey. Saudi Arabia detains a Yemeni American citizen while performing the Hajj pilgrimage over remarks critical of the monarchy. Also ahead, tens of thousands take to the streets in Mexico to protest President Obrador's plan to overhaul the country's electoral commission. Our top story, Iran strongly condemns the attack in the Turkish city of Istanbul, which left at least six people dead and more than 80 others wounded. The foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said Tehran censures any act of terrorism that undermines the security of Turkey. He added that the Islamic Republic stands by the Turkish government and people. The blast occurred on the busy Istiklal Street in Taksim area, which is popular with locals and tourists. Turkish authorities say a woman carried out the attack. There's been no claim of responsibility yet. Istanbul and other Turkish cities have in the past been targeted by Kurdish separatists, Daesh terrorists and other groups. Our Istanbul correspondent Rashan Sagalam joined us earlier with more on the potential culprits behind the explosion.
He also said that the officials were able to know that a woman was the one who placed the explosive device in Istiklal Street, where the bombing took place. And he said that they were able to know the perpetrators and they will reveal information very soon. He also said that we will not allow those terrorists to reach their goals in Turkey, and we will be able to make this nation safe again. Right before Erdogan was speaking, we heard gunshots in an area that is very close to Istiklal Street. It's called Shishhana. The gunshots were heard for like a few minutes, and the police was in the area. So I think that probably this could be they could be following the suspect. Since they revealed that the suspect was a woman, I think that is most likely that those perpetrators behind what happened today is the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, because as we all know that Kurdistan Workers Party is known that mainly the suicide bombers, the fighters in it, half of them is females. So they're mainly women, and a lot of them have been involved in explosions or attacks that took place inside Istanbul.
Tehran has reacted to the French President Emmanuel Macron's meeting with so-called anti-Iran campaigners. During our news review program, we discussed the France's support for destabilizing acts against the Islamic Republic.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The French President Emmanuel Macron's recent meeting with anti-Iran activists is drawing a strong reaction from Tehran. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the meeting was a flagrant violation of France's international responsibilities in the fight against terrorism and violence. He dismissed Macron's praise for an anti-Iran activist as regrettable and shameful. Kanani said that it is surprising that the president of a country which advocates freedom would degrade himself by meeting a dissident who has tried to spread hatred and carry out violent and terrorist acts both inside and in Iran and against Iran's diplomatic missions abroad. Macron on Friday met with four notorious anti-Iran women activists, among them Masih Alinejad, who has for years led an anti-Iran campaign from the U.S. Masoud Shajaria from the Islamic Human Rights Commission joins us from London. We also have Said Zafar Mehdi, who is a journalist, joining us here in the capital, Tehran. Welcome to you both. Masoud Shajaria, first I'll start with you. It's quite interesting to have this meeting with these anti-Iran activists. I'm not too sure what to name them, but we're going to name them that. But the first question that comes about is, how does a meeting like that actually take place? Because behind the scenes, obviously, something was in the works in order to have a presence of another country, in this case France, meet with them. What do you think about this meeting?
Well, the fact of the matter is that these individuals, in particular Massie, is known for promoting violence or indeed working with the terrorist groups like MKO and others to undermine and create destabilize and securitize the state of Iran. And it around the world would allow this sort of insecurity to be systematically promoted and implemented in their country. And the fact of the matter is, it's not just standing for the concept of freedom or freedom of expression or women's rights. It really goes far. France is not just a sort of bystander. Activities of destabilizing Iran, trying to turn Iran to another Libya and Syria, it actually is actively involved. And by promoting these individuals and meeting them, it actually proves that. And then on the other side, what is really important is France talking about freedom for women. You know, come on, this is the country that sort of banned hijab. This is a country that at the same time asking people to wear face masks is actually make it unlawful for women to actually have a niqab, and they are not able to go to be educated, they can't go to university, they can't go to schools, they can't go to governmental buildings for having hijab or niqab. And they have got the audacity to talk about freedom for women. I mean, come on, this is outrageous. You know, they should be ashamed of themselves to actually come out with this sort of slogans and trying to actually use these sort of principles for trying to create disharmony and insecurity in Iran, and doing this so publicly and so openly and so much based on double standards and hypocrisy.
Well, Said Zafar-Mahdi, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the character and the personality that the French president seems to have been so keen to entertain and to receive by the name of Massie Ahmadinejad, because her background is not one that really is something to be, in some sense, proud of when you take a look at the associations that she has. And in particular, if you can expand on how she's being somewhat supported by either this administration or the former administration, from the likes of the former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, for example, and other U.S. officials, even people that perhaps is being speculated that she's being thwarted into the scene by providing her with finances in order for her to promote her anti-Iran agenda.
First of all, thank you for having me. Well, be it French presidents meeting with this notorious self-proclaimed rights activist, or his shameful, ridiculous remarks that he made after meeting them, or even that of the German chancellor, it clearly amounts to brazen interference in Iran's internal affairs. Well, as you can see, these Western officials, which includes Macron and other Western officials, have been hell-bent on stoking sedition, on instigating rioters, on fanning the flames of unrest in Iran and anarchy, civil war in Iran in recent weeks. The fact that Macron met this delegation of self-proclaimed human rights activists makes it even more preposterous. You know, as the foreign ministry spokesman said earlier today, and you mentioned it, these women have been primarily responsible for fanning violence and hatred in Iran in recent weeks by spreading misinformation and propaganda on social media, on other media. Like, take the case of Massie Ahmadinejad, you know, one of the women who met Macron. She has been, on the payroll of CIA and US State Department for years now, and it's very clear to everybody. And her task is very clear-cut, you know, cut out, you know, to push the regime change agenda of the Western powers in Iran through propaganda, through misinformation, and she gets paid for that. And she has, in recent weeks, you know, sort of bragged about being the leader of these rights in Iran. You know, as you can see, there has been a competition for leadership of these deadly rights, from a former footballer to this lady. When it comes to this lady or other people who are involved in this regime change agenda of Western powers, I don't see any difference between them and those MKO terrorists who have blood of thousands of Iranians on their hands. There are many other Iranian expats who were in this delegation. Some of them were in this delegation who met Macron. They have been used by American spy agencies for years. And many of them happen to be working for the prestigious US-based think tanks. So it's natural that Iran will react strongly to Macron's meeting with these troublemongering Western agents.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to leave it there. Master Shajar, Islamic Human Rights Commission, and Sayed Zafar Mehdi, journalist who joined us from Tehran. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Another U.S. citizen has been arrested in Saudi Arabia after getting into a dispute with security officials while performing the pilgrimage. Mohammed Salim, an American of Yemeni origin, was taken into custody in Mecca on November the 1st for making remarks critical of the monarchy. The 63-year-old has been transferred to a maximum security facility typically used for high-profile political prisoners and suspected terrorists. There is no information whether the man has been charged. Last month, another U.S. citizen of Saudi origin was sentenced to 16 years in prison. That apparently because of his Twitter posts on topics including the war on Yemen and the 2018 killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Israel has carried out a deadly missile strike against Syrian military positions in the country's central province of Homs. Syrian media say two soldiers were killed in the latest aggression targeting the Shayrat air base southeast of Homs. Three others were also injured. According to Syrian media, the country's air defense systems intercepted most of the missiles. The Israeli regime frequently launches missile attacks inside Syria, but rarely claims responsibility. The attacks mainly target the Syrian military as well as resistance forces battling foreign-backed terrorists. Damascus has time and again complained to the United Nations about Israel's raids, calling for international action and condemnation of the violation of its sovereignty and territorial integrity. Turning elsewhere now, tens of thousands of Mexicans have taken to the streets of the capital, Mexico City, to protest a presidential plan to overhaul the country's electoral commission. The demonstrators fear that Andrés Manuel López Obrador's scheme would concentrate power in the hands of the government. López Obrador, who put the plan forward in April, has long criticized the country's electoral authorities. He accused them of helping to engineer his defeats when he ran for president in 2006 and 2012. He says the reform would let citizens elect electoral authorities and reduce the influence of economic interests in politics. There are concerns that the plan would bring about a power grab because it gives the president more control over the electoral systems. Moving on, the Ukrainian president says investigations have revealed that Russian troops committed hundreds of war crimes in Ukraine's Kherson region.
слідчимо вже.
Investigators have already documented more than 400 Russian war crimes. Bodies of both civilians and military are being found. In the Kherson region, the Russian army left the same savagery behind as in other regions of our country, which it managed to invade. We will find and bring to justice every murderer, without any doubts.
Zelensky stated that law and order has been restored in many areas in Kherson, where the hunt, as he said, was on for Russian soldiers and mercenaries. Meanwhile, he added that fighting in the eastern Donetsk region is as intense as it had been in recent days, with no let-up in Russian attacks. Zelensky also said Ukrainian forces' resilience and courage are at their highest level as they confront Russian troops. He said the Ukrainian military will not allow Russia forces to penetrate Ukrainian defenses. In Spain, hundreds of thousands of people march through central Madrid to protest against the regional government's healthcare policy. They say the policy is destroying primary healthcare. Trade unions, healthcare workers, and left-wing politicians were among those marching. Organizers say the regional government's cuts in funding and staff have increased waiting lists and prompted layoffs and job uncertainty. They say Madrid spends the least on primary healthcare despite being Spain's richest region. Local authorities say there were upwards of 200,000 people at the protest, but organizers put the figure at over 600,000. And that brings an end to World Bulletin for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, there are clear signs of recession, with gross domestic product estimated to have fallen by 0.6% in the month of September. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Sun has more for us. In Britain, the economy shrunk by 0.2% between July and September, new figures have revealed, as experts warn the country is heading for recession. The Office for National Statistics said that gross domestic product, or GDP, had fallen by 0.6% in September. Gross domestic product, or GDP, measures the value of goods and services produced in the United Kingdom. It also estimates the size of and growth in the economy. The Office of National Statistics said the figures may have been affected by the bank holiday for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. This is because some businesses closed or operated shorter hours for the day as a mark of respect. It could be the beginning of a recession, which is defined as two quarters of shrinking gross domestic product GDP in a row. but in the last quarter, April to June, the economy grew unexpectedly by 0.2%. This means the economy would need to shrink again in the next quarter for the country to formally enter a recession. Manufacturing was also down in the 3 months to September. Office for National Statistics Director of Economic Statistics, Darren Morgan, said, with September showing a notable fall partly due to the effects of the additional bank holiday for the Queen's funeral, overall economy shrank slightly in the third quarter. The quarterly fall was driven by manufacturing, which saw widespread declines across most industries. Services were flat overall, but consumer-facing industries fared badly, with a notable fall in retail. Today's figures come just a week after the Bank of England warned that the United Kingdom could be facing the longest recession in the past 100 years. However, the Bank of England itself cautioned that this would only happen if it raises interest rates to around 5.2%, which the market was expecting at the time. But it doesn't expect interest rates to reach such a high level now, which would imply that the recession could be less drawn out. Responding to the figures, Chancellor Jeremy Hunt said, "There is a tough road ahead that will require extremely difficult decisions." Hunt said, "To achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books, and get debt falling. There is no other way." While the world economy faces extreme turbulence, the fundamental resilience of the British economy is cause for optimism in the long run. In less than a week, Jeremy Hunt will unveil the government's autumn statement, a budget that will have huge implications for your pocket. The Bank of England uses gross domestic product as one of the key indicators when it sets the base interest rate. Last week, it unveiled the biggest interest rate rise since the 1980s, increasing interest rates to 3%. The hike is usually passed on to consumers in the form of higher interest rates on mortgages and other borrowing. Savers could earn more on the cash they have in their accounts, though banks are usually slower to pass on a rate increase on savings. Alice Hain, personal finance analyst at Best Invest, said, "As we head into winter and a potentially long drawn-out recession, consumers are right to be fearful of bleak times ahead." She added, "Food inflation rose by 14.6% on the year to September, while those remortgaging now are facing monthly repayments hundreds of pounds higher. A scaled-back Christmas will be crucial for those whose budgets are already squeezed to the max." The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. Britain's economy contracted during the third quarter as it shrank more than expected in September, suggesting the country has entered what is forecast to be a prolonged recession. Gross domestic product, or GDP, fell 0.6% between August and September, the Office for National Statistics said on Friday. A larger drop than the 0.4% forecast by economists polled by the Reuters news agency. Output fell 0.2% between the second and third quarters, the first such contraction in more than a year. Economists had expected shrinkage of 0.5%. Britain's economy is now 0.2% smaller than it was in February of 2020, immediately prior to the COVID pandemic. Other major economies, including the United States, Germany and France, have grown above pre-pandemic levels. Sanjay Raja, economist at Deutsche Bank, said the UK gross domestic product contraction in the third quarter was a result of continued weakness in household and business confidence, higher inflation and higher interest rates in the economy. The Bank of England last week forecast that the third quarter would be the start of a long recession lasting up to 2 years, as a central bank raises interest rates to curb high inflation. The latest gross domestic product figures provided a difficult backdrop to next week's autumn statement, in which the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, is expected to tighten fiscal policy despite the economic downturn. Jeremy Hunt is considering tax rises and public spending cuts worth up to £55 billion a year to try to fill a gaping hole in the public finances and restore financial markets' confidence in the UK after Liz Truss's ill-fated premiership. Her mini-budget involved £45 billion of unfunded tax cuts, most of which Jeremy Hunt has pledged to reverse after Liz Truss's plans roiled the markets. Jeremy Hunt said, "I'm under no illusion that there is a tough road ahead, one which will require extremely difficult decisions to restore confidence and economic stability. But to achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books, and get debt falling. There is no other way."
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody, and here is a wonderful saying from the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. "The most helpless of all persons is he who cannot find a few brothers during his life. But a still more helpless is he who finds such a brother but loses him."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program. I'm your host Hossein Hinzano, and in today's lesson we're talking about pleasure and perfection. Now, man's true perfection is the ultimate existential degree and the most sublime perfection which man is able to reach. All other perfections are like preliminaries and are organic or relative. The being preliminary perfections hinges on the effect in making man reach his true perfection, even though the latter might be of various degrees. As a consequence, true perfection is man's genuine desire, and the desirability of other objects is minor and depends on their involvement in reaching true perfection. Likewise, the pleasure desired by man is one derived from reaching true perfection. Other pleasures are like, you know, preliminary steps, because as already pointed out, genuine pleasure is derived from fulfilling a genuine desire. Now, consequently, recognition of true perfection depends on the recognition of genuine pleasure. Conversely, recognition of genuine pleasure hinges on recognition of true perfection. As genuine pleasure provides the greatest pleasure possible, and recognition of genuine pleasure is accompanied by recognition of something which can provide man with the greatest and the most sublime and the most enduring of all pleasures. For this reason, if we get to know the most pleasurable beings, we will also recognize the genuine pleasure and the true perfection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We were talking about pleasure and perfection. And we are saying that no matter how a man tries in his life, so long as he lives in this world, he is always after such of perfection. He wants to be complete. He wants to be perfect. And one of his ways to do this is for him to search for ways of pleasuring himself. He needs pleasures to come towards his side, always after the pleasures. And he is also always against the pains and the agonies of life. He's trying so hard not to meet pain. He's trying so hard not to meet any kind of agony. Thus, it is befitting to ponder over the reality of pleasure and the reason behind differences in its degrees. It has different degrees. A pleasure can be one-sided. A pleasure can be this amount, like let's say a pleasure can be 20% in this particular season, and goes up to 40% in the other season, just with the same thing. So it differs in degrees. Now, so that we could recognize the most sublime and the most enduring pleasures of man. Now, what the man is experiencing within himself and is interpreting as pleasure is a conceptual state overcoming him when he reaches a desired objective. Provided that he considers that objective as desirable and that we beware of it and pay heed upon reaching it. He is always after reaching it. He is always after gaining that extra perfection, extra need of having to be perfect, of having to be complete. And he is always after that by doing what? By pulling all the pleasures towards his side and siding himself away, keeping himself far from any type of pain and agony. Thank you so much for following up on this program. Until next episode, we'll meet again, inshallah. Fi amanillah Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Usually rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Don O'Keen, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario, where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis. So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of a tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says, "It's strange to meet so many people with the same name." Obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
In the United States, Republicans hope to achieve the most powerful victory in American history and to be able to take control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. But their popularity has waned. Political experts blame former U.S. President Donald Trump for this situation and say by choosing incompetent candidates and his opposition to some popular candidates, the Republicans were unable to create a red wave and to win control of both houses of Congress. We've taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The New York Times has more for us. Incomplete results from midterm elections in the United States show that the Republican Party is ahead in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, but has performed far more poorly than it has been expected to. Following the election and according to results so far, 49 seats at the Senate are now held by Republicans, compared to 48 by Democrats. And 207 U.S. representatives are Republican, compared to 189 who are Democratic. As such, Republicans are certain to gain the majority in the House of Representatives, even as vote counting continues. But the race for the majority in the Senate is as yet undecided. Votes for Nevada and Arizona are still being counted, and a tight race in Georgia has officially headed for a December 6 runoff. The Georgia runoff could mean that control of the upper chamber might not be decided for weeks. The Republicans were forced to celebrate a much smaller victory than they had anticipated, even though they appeared to have secured the majority at the House and may do so at the Senate as well. Republicans failed to deliver on a big red wave that was supposed to sweep the country with a base roused by former President Donald Trump. The New York Times called that performance an underwhelming finish. The narrow Republican victory was also soured when conservatives, dismayed by many missed opportunities, began to publicly attack Donald Trump for his toxic leadership of the party, including on Fox News Channel, the former president's favorite television network and the one mostly associated with his vision of the Republican Party. David Urban, a longtime Donald Trump advisor, said Republicans have followed Donald Trump off the side of a cliff. And Peter King, a former Republican representative who has long supported Trump, said, "I strongly believe he should no longer be the face of the Republican Party." Chris Christie, a former governor of New Jersey, told ABC News, "Almost every one of these Trump-endorsed candidates that you see in competitive states has lost. It's a huge loss for Trump." Some even called for him to hold off plans to run a third presidential campaign in 2024. The Republican performance may have been one of the weakest by an out-of-power party against the first-term presidents in decades. Meanwhile, The Hill newspaper has more for us on the same story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's critics and the Republican Party have asked him to stay away from the runoff election in Georgia, blaming him for the disappointing performance in last Tuesday's vote. Senate Republicans are worried that Donald Trump may derail the GOP party's chances of winning the runoff election in Georgia next month by either casting doubt on the legitimacy of the midterm elections or announcing his plan for the 2024 presidential election. Donald Trump on Monday, 7th of November, announced that he would make a big announcement on 15th of November at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida. Meanwhile, Republicans are concerned that the Georgia runoff between Senator Raphael Warnock, a Democrat, and the Republican candidate Herschel Walker could turn into a referendum on Trump that will likely result in a loss that could cost them control of the U.S. Senate. As things stand, Republicans will control at least 49 Senate seats next year, compared to 48 by Democrats, which means they need to win two of the three unresolved races in Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada to gain the Senate majority in 2023. However, the House of Representatives majority went to the Republicans. The results from the midterm elections on Tuesday showed that the Republican Party had performed far more poorly than it was expected to perform. In the meantime, Donald Trump continues to push his claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from him and has demanded that the candidates he supports embrace his views, though he has failed to back them with any proof. WISN Television, a television station in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, has also covered the same story. Former U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan believes the Republican Party would have had better results on Election Day if former President Donald Trump wasn't involved in the election campaign. Paul Ryan said on Thursday, 10th of November, that his party is suffering from a Trump hangover. He said the former president's continued prominence on the national political scene is causing problems for Republican candidates, adding, "Republicans didn't see that red wave like they were predicting following the election on Tuesday, 8th of November, and according to the results so far, the race for the majority in the U.S. Senate is still undecided." Paul Ryan, who had an uneasy relationship with Donald Trump during his time in the House leadership, said that Trump's kind of a drag on our ticket. "I think Donald Trump gives us problems politically." He added, "We lost the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2 years when Trump was on the ballot or in office." Paul Ryan also suggested that Trump will not get the Republican presidential nomination in 2024. He said, "We want to win. We want to win the White House, and we know that Donald Trump was so much more likely to lose." Trump, who has given every indication that he will launch another bid for the White House in 2024, has claimed he lost the 2020 election because of widespread election fraud. The former president and his right-wing allies have already started casting doubt on the legitimacy of last Tuesday's midterm elections. The Democrats were surprised U.S. President Joe Biden